morning to all of you. Thank you for being here. And we'll do quickly some introductions because it's been a while that we've been together. And I sometimes, if it's just a week goes by, I might not remember who I just talked to. So it's good to go around the room and say who we are and what we represent and if there's a organization or whatever, but a little bit. And we'll move on and do a few things because we've got some special guests that need to be out of here a little bit earlier, too. But happy to see you all. So maybe I'm Ardell Brady from Rochester, Minnesota. It's I always say that when I go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, if I don't say that, they all think I'm from New York then, but I don't have that New York accent. So anyway, it's and I'm the mayor of Rochester, and we have a lot of wonderful things that are happening down there. And it's been exciting. There's a lot of things that are happening with the Destination Medical Center. But anyway, and the university is going, and the UMR down there is going as well. So thanks so much. And maybe if I can just start with the senator over there.
Good morning, Senator Terry Bonoff, representing Minnetonka and Plymouth, and of course I have to say current candidate for Congress. Glad to be a part of ARCAC.
Very good.
Margaret Carlson, Minnetonka.
I am Dan Walter from Burnsville.
Kathy Madsen from Burnsville.
Bill Brady from St. Paul.
My name is Theo Menon. I am a student at the University of Minnesota.
And what area I heard Paul asking you to just...
I'm a sophomore majoring in applied economics in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences.
Good. Thank you. Welcome.
Bert McAfee, Mendota Heights.
Paul Taylor, Minnetonka.
Chuck Armstrong, Woodbury.
Very good. And?
I'm Sally Olson, the council staff.
I want to say, too, it's been a while, as I said, but we did great work last time, and right at the end of it, I just thought how dedicated everybody is, and we stuck to what we needed to do and present that, and I often say in some ways it's unfortunate, all the great stuff we do, it kind of can come unraveled when it goes then to the legislature, and it's almost like, wait a minute now, we did all the interviews and all that, but I just want to commend all of you for the job that we did last time and over the years. So it's another season, and we will be working hard again as usual. And I know there's been some work that's been done. I know Paul has been very active during the, quote, off season. So here we are in spring training ready to go again. So it's very good. We have some minutes that are in your packet, and while they go back a ways, one of them even to December of 2014, Sally tells me that we never did approve those. So we've got a couple sets of minutes for the January 5th to the 9th, all those meetings that were held then, and also of 2015, and then December 12th of 2014. So we'll need a motion to approve those, and we could...
I've got a call. I believe I was at the December 12th meeting, but I will have to check my calendar. I don't see myself on the list.
She was. Okay. So we'll get that changed on there. Any other comments? And we're going to have a motion to approve them.
I'll move approval as amended.
Move it. Is there a second?
Second.
Any other comments about the minutes? And again, thanks to Sally for getting those done. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Very good. I'm going to do that election. So, Paul, is that your area, the election of officers, or somebody going to make some recommendations?
Harriet Porter, who was stuck in Chicago, and so she's asked me to present the nominating committee report. And the report is to propose the following officers for the RCAC during the upcoming cycle. The report recommends Ardell Brady to be appointed for another term as chair of the RCAC, and then we'll have two vice chairs that have been recommended, Dan Walter and Lois Josephson. So those are, that's the report of the nominating committee.
OK. Okay. Yes, sir.
Who is on the nominating committee?
Harriet.
Harriet and I were on the nominating committee.
Right. Any other questions on that, Bert?
No.
Okay. Lois, your timing is good.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions on that? We need to have action on that. So, Paul, are you moving then that as well? Is there a second to that?
I move the adoption of the nominating committee report.
I'll second.
Chuck, thank you. Any other comments? Not. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. And thanks to Dan and Lois for being willing to participate and take part in an extra effort. Okay, we have a presentation by the Board of Regents, Regent Johnson, who's the chair currently of the board, and Brian Steves, who's the executive director of the office. And we welcome you, and we're honored with your presence here. Thanks for being here on the last Friday of summer, I guess they're calling it. I heard that on the way up this morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the ARCOC, thank you for inviting Mr. Steves, myself, to be with you this morning and give some thoughts and ideas about the region selections process and the vetting that goes on. But first, let me thank you for serving. I know it's a voluntary position, and you come from various parts of the state, and it takes time. And on behalf of my fellow regents and all concerned, we thank you very much for your service. This is my ninth year in the Board of Regents, having been elected two times, having sat here in this room going through the vetting process. And as Senator Bonhoeff knows, that we who served in the legislature know that the selection of the Board of Regents, we scratch our heads sometimes. And not to oversimplify, but oftentimes in the caucus meetings, the four caucuses have, someone will raise their hand, Representative Burt McAsee would remember this, and ask the question, is this the year that we elect regents? And someone will say, yes, this is the year we're going to elect regents. How many? Well, it's always, the answer is four. Who's running? And the discussion begins on a very informal basis. Now, I'm not trying to minimize the selection process, but that's literally how it begins in the legislative process. Someone says, well, we'll set that aside because we have the budget, we have transportation, and we have this and that to talk about. So oftentimes it gets pushed back. And that's unfortunate because it's a very important position to serve as regent for the University of Minnesota, the governing board. Having said that, the work that you do is very, very important in the vetting process of a regent. Let me give you four or five ideas or observations of individuals that, after 9 years of serving, that I think are important qualities for a regent. First, a person who is willing to collaborate and not advance their own agenda. We all have our own political thoughts. We all have our ideas about the University of Minnesota, the way things ought to be, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, a regent needs to be able to collaborate and work together in unison with fellow regents and not say, well, this is my political position or this is my regional position or whatever. Come together for the good of the University of Minnesota, keeping in mind we're a land-grant institution and we serve the people of Minnesota. Second of all, I would encourage you, as you have done, because as we look at an individual, what he or she has done in the past is very telling what they're going to do in the future. Yes, we have resumes, we have references, but also talk to some people, perhaps, that are one's detractors. And we all have detractors. And they are live in our community. We have worked with them. And they will oftentimes be honest and say so-and-so is good in this but needs to improve in this. And thus, is our life history, how we work professionally and vocationally. So look at someone's track record, not what they tell you they're going to do, but what they've done in the past and how they have responded to certain situations. Thirdly, to be a regent, one needs to understand that it's a public role. We live under the auspices of the open meeting law. We subscribe to that. Our committee meetings, our board meetings are all public. For the people of Minnesota to see, to scrutinize, to make comment. But we are public officials, much like many of you are as you serve in as mayors and state senators and various capacities. And it's important to understand we are public officials, and we are doing the public's work in this important role. Fourthly, I would offer this. A person who knows how to build relationships. Building relationships seems easy, but building relationships with people who don't always agree with you is more difficult. But to be respectful and understanding of various individuals as they bring different ideas, different thoughts to the Board of Regents is very important. Balance is important. We always were concerned about geographic, gender balance, political balance. You get all these balancing acts, but finally, you're going to select individuals who are qualified in your mind as this committee, as this commission, to advance to the legislature. If you were to press me and say, Dean, what is the most important ingredient? I would offer this. Find an individual who has some experience in governance. There's a lot of fine managers and owners in the state of Minnesota that would make good regents. That's fine. But governance is a whole different matter. We hire the president, President Kaler, and his administration to manage, to administer the policies set forth by the regents. Governance is a whole other matter, and we're living in a day and age when governance is under scrutiny. I don't care if it's corporate boards, if it's volunteer boards, it's Board of Regents, Minsky Board. We are being scrutinized in a different way, and governance is tremendously important. We all have our thoughts and frustrations. One of mine is when some of my fellow regents, well-intentioned, get too far in the weeds. They just say, you know, we're not going to do that. That's the administration. That's the dean. That's the chancellor, whatever. Our job is to put forth policies in the matters of governance. So you might want to look at someone's resume and ask them the question, he or she, what is your governance experience? Have you served on a governing board? It could be a small board. It could be a major corporate board. And tell me about your experiences. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members, I will conclude. And our executive director, Brian Steves, who leads a wonderful staff, would make some comments. And then we would certainly be open for questions.
Good. Thank you.
At your behest. So thank you very much again for serving and for the work that you're going to do in sending forth qualified, vetted candidates to the members of the legislature.
Well, thank you very much, and you've done much in the past and continue to do that, so thank you. Mr. Steves.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having us here today, and I guess what I would certainly echo Chair Johnson's thanks for your service, but I would also thank you for your openness and willingness to invite, always have a regent here and invite input from our office. It's very much appreciated, and we are thrilled to be able to provide whatever we can do to assist you in your work. So, as Regent Johnson alluded to, higher education governance is very difficult. You read the headlines just like we do. Tuition, student debt, administrative costs, campus climate, freedom of speech, rankings, academic quality, athletics, student experience, and on and on and on. I mean, the list is long, and these are just the items that Regent Johnson dealt with before breakfast today. So,
not to mention the Regent staff.
So the list of topics that a governing board at a higher education institution deals with are numerous and often very complex. But what I try to help regents understand is that effective governing boards really focus the vast majority of their time on
four simple questions. And those four simple questions I'll just outline briefly. One of them is, where are we going? A board is uniquely positioned to articulate the mission of the organization and to co-create with the president a vision for fulfilling that mission. So the where are we going? That's space that a board needs to be focusing time and effort in. Who's responsible for getting us there? These questions seem like, well, wouldn't this be easy to answer? But boards have to be very thoughtful about what authorities are they delegating to the administration? What authorities are they reserving to themselves? That has to be clear. And you know, as Chair Johnson pointed out, you know, sometimes there are different philosophies on a board around that, and so a board has to come together around what's our common understanding of how authorities are going to be reserved and delegated. Third, how will we measure progress? Boards have to understand how will tomorrow look different than today, which means you have to have some kind of benchmarks, measures, metrics, qualitative or quantitative, somehow. You have to know how tomorrow will be different, and boards have to focus on that. And finally, what risks might take us off course? Boards are uniquely positioned because they are outside eyes. They're not inside the organization. They can come in with fresh perspective. They can ask questions and need to ask questions to help the organization avoid risks or to avoid missing opportunities that the organization might have not pursued otherwise. So over the next year, you may or may not be aware that the university is going to be undertaking development of a system-wide strategic plan. So this is not one to replace the Twin Cities strategic plan, which you may be familiar with, or UMB's strategic plan, or other units' strategic plans. But what it's trying to do is to step back for a minute and say, how do we knit together or weave together these wonderful plans into something that causes the whole to be greater than the sum of its parts? And so the university has many great units doing great work, but how do we leverage them together to do something even better for the state? And that's an area that the board will be heavily engaged in this coming year, along with a number of other things, because we don't have the luxury of just doing one thing. But the board will be spending a fair amount of time on that with the president. And so that is an area where we will continue to be cultivating a board culture of engagement and a board where we're focused on these types of questions so that the board is adding value to that process. As Chair Johnson noted, it's really critical to have board members who can understand and embrace the complex role of a governing board, who understand what that means and maybe even have experience with that. Folks who can build relationships, who understand that there's a balance between a board's role in supporting the president and in being a critical eye, who has to ask probing questions, and who can understand and analyze the long-term impact of decisions that are being made. So with that, I'll close and just say we would be happy to answer any questions, and thank you again for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, and both of you have given great insight and oversight of what goes on in all of this. So I open it up to anybody that has any questions of our guests. Lois.
Thank you very much for your comments. To your close to closing statement about the 2017 task, an umbrella greater than a whole piece, is that new? Has that kind of a knit together been done before?
It has not been done recently. I don't know that I can't speak to all of history, but it has not been done recently. And more recently, each campus has a strategic plan, and then some of the major functional areas have strategic plans, but they have not been tied together as tightly. And this has been an area where the board and the president have had a conversation and have really come to realize that this needs to be a priority this year.
The context of asking the question is, hadn't been familiar with it being in existence in the past, and speaking as a citizen, not as an RCAC member, thank you in spades four times over, and Godspeed
Thank you. Others? Questions?
Mr. Chairman, I thought of one or two other quick items. As former Representative McAsee knows and Senator Bonhaff knows, weekly people in the legislature say, you know, the system of region selection needs to be changed. And people introduce bills and there's discussions and hearings. We look at the other Big Ten schools. We look at other universities. Despite some of the flaws that we have in this system, I would continue to advocate for the system of this, of the RCAC vetting process, as well as the selection by the legislature. And I'll tell you why. In this Big Ten schools where the governor appoints, in some places conferred by the Senate, it becomes even more political, than the present system that we have. And then the governor says, well, I appointed you to the Board of Regents, therefore, here's my agenda. And sometimes, well, I'll just leave it at that. But I just think that it, despite its flaws, I do think this is a better system. And I've discussed it with colleagues in the Big Ten, some of my fellow regents, and they say, well, tell me about that. And they're kind of intrigued, but, you know, haven't really done much about it. The other issue is, and I felt it when I sat here in the room, Mr. Johnson, you were in the legislature. Why do you think you ought to be on the Board of Regents? I said it's not because I was in the legislature, in the House, or the Senate. I hope because of the qualifications I bring. Regent Laura Broad, who many of you know, we've served together. I would tell you publicly, Laura Broad's one of the best regents we have. And I would say right to Laura's face, Regent Broad, it was when Regent Broad decided that this was not a political organization, but it was the University of Minnesota, and she and I talked about that we couldn't be political, if you will, partisan political, but for the best interests of the university. And so I say to you, if there is a legislator, former legislator, do not be fearful of that person, because they bring a wealth of information and experiences. But it's more importantly how they have operated in the past, as I stated before, and how you see he or she performing their duties. I am not fearful for a moment of past legislators, good, bad, or indifferent, because I have seen a very positive. And I'm not advocating for anyone, or just a process thought that people ask me, you know, when I was running.
I hear you. It's not red and blue. It's maroon and gold now. Right. So, you know, yes. Margaret.
Yes. Regent Johnson, I have attended the Regents meetings in May, June, and July, and I have to absolutely endorse what you say about Laura Broad. In fact, I gave her that feedback. Mm-hmm. And the second thing I would say, I think all the RCAC members really must attend a Regents meeting if they can do so before we continue the process and go on. It is the most illuminating way to not only look at people, but then ask questions when we meet with candidates. And so, Brian, even if you could get the meeting schedule to Sally, and if she could distribute it, I think there's only one more meeting before our December meeting on your December date, but I would really encourage all of you to be there.
Thank you. Good advice. Yep.
Mr. Chairman, you're more than welcome, and Brian will get those dates to you. Our board meetings are on a Friday morning from 9 to 12, and at 12 o'clock, we quit.
Great. Other comments or questions from any of our council members? Well, again, I would say on behalf of the RCAC here, it's an honor to have you here. Appreciate that very much. You're taking the time. It's valuable for us to hear your comments, too, as to how we proceed. And some of us have been on here before, but like I say, it's kind of spring training. You've got to go back and kind of be reminded of some of those things again as to who covers first base and so on and so forth. So as a baseball player, used to be long ago, but anyway, I was a shortstop then. But anyway, thank you so much for being here, and thanks for all the great work you do.
Thank you all. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Doing that. Okay, Sally is handling number 5.
So I'm not going to go into it because you're all pretty much familiar, but in your packets is a short subject by House Research that really describes the process of the region election really well. And the objectives, you know, of the RCAC are to recommend between 2 and 4 candidates to the legislature, to the Joint Higher Education Committee of the legislature for each open seat. But if you ever have any questions, I think this is a good document to read. The council is also charged with developing selection criteria for applicants and candidates, which Kathy will be presenting later on, and that is also recommended to be submitted to the Joint Higher Education Committee. And then the second document I just want to point out in your member in your packet is about related to Regent Candidate Advisory Council procedures, and this was also prepared for us by the House Research Department in 2012. And it's just a good reminder and refresher that as a council, we are subject to the open meeting law, and so if there's a majority present, the meetings must be open. And I just really want to point that out in regards to electronic communications. If a citizen or if I or another member emails everybody, try to avoid replying all and conducting business over email. That seems to be the biggest hiccup we run into. And then the second part of this memo is related to the Data Practices Act, and also a good reminder, and this is important as we start to receive applications for the positions on the board, that certain information is private. So if anybody makes a request to you, a citizen of the public, for information on who applied or their application, just suggest you refer them to staff. We redact applications, and we will submit that information. And then the data practices we'll run into again when we conduct reference checks in an open meeting, but I think it's good to get into that conversation at the next meeting so it's fresh on your mind. But otherwise, that's pretty much the business.
Very good. Any questions on that? That open meeting law, that's, I know our city attorney constantly is reminding our city council members that no good comes from hitting reply to all. So it's one of those things. Actually, I was down in Kansas City at an entrepreneurial area of the city, and in one of those areas there was a big poster on the wall that said that, no good comes. And I took a picture of it and sent it back to Terry Atkins, our city attorney, and he said, I'm going to get that made for every one of you so you all keep track of that. But it's so easy to do that, and then you've violated something. And we just had an issue the other day where some of the council or all of the council was invited to take a tour of the new senior center, and the media, somebody said they weren't allowed. Well, that became a big editorial in the paper because how can you do that? You got the whole council there. That's open meeting. So it's, I can't underscore that enough as well. So good. We're on. And Harriet Porter is not here, but I believe Kathy, you're going to take care of this next item.
So in your packet, you'll see a Regent Candidate Guidelines for Member Conduct. This is an updated version of a document that was initially prepared in 1996. What we did with this is there was a change to the introduction to make it more like a code of conduct to fit kind of the standard corporate processes. And then some kind of revisions of the wording, but what we primarily focused on was adding language that dealt with the data privacy issues to fit with the open meetings laws, and also added some other information about when the work of the council is done, kind of what our role is. So those are the two major changes. I know people didn't really get a lot of chance to see this ahead of time, and I did receive some feedback in the last couple days that I need to deal with. So I think, and I talked with Ardell about this, is that we're going to, I'd like more input if you guys have any input. And you can send it to Sally. Sally will get it to me and whoever else needs to see it. But our thought is that we're going to do some more revising to this, and then we'll approve it at the next meeting, give people a chance to weigh in some more, and also you know, some time to review it in more depth.
Kathy, will there be a subcommittee meeting to look at this? Because I'm just one that provided you some feedback, and I would very much appreciate if there was a subcommittee, because otherwise it's done in a vacuum without the volunteer input, which was exactly what Dean Johnson talked about, is the importance of volunteers speaking. So I would like to be on in a part of that before it's crafted.
I don't think there's a committee for this.
But we could certainly.
Just even an ad hoc committee. Mm-hmm. Then people feel good about it, even if you don't accept any of their recommendations. They said, you know, somebody saw something, they want to explain it. Here's the reason we can't do it. We can do it in a different way. That's just responsible.
I guess I'd even look, is there anybody right now that would like to serve on that? And
am I getting the look? Well, so they asked me to update it because I have experience doing data privacy work. That's an area of law that I practice in. So that's why they initially asked me to kind of update some of this. So I'm happy to do it, and people can join me since I've been working on the document.
If it's happening in the very near term, like sometime in the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, it has to, because we need to get it out in advance of the next.
Okay.
I would also say perhaps Bert McKaysey, who just left the room, might like to be on that committee, because I actually talked to him about my suggestions before I sent them to Sally and Kathy.
So we could take people that are interested now, and maybe Sally could send out to those that contact you, send out a note to those that aren't here, well, all of us, and so
yep.
Anybody that's not here could also at least weigh in on it and hopefully be able to get together
yep.
soon, and or is it permissible by phone if somebody?
I think we have to be in a room and people can dial
okay.
in.
Okay, understand.
But I'm close enough that I can come in and set up a phone call if necessary, Lois. I know you, it's a drive for you, so we
right.
can have it. So
I will have
call.
Discrete windows when I could.
Got it.
Sure.
Well, good. Thank you very much. I guess maybe if it's appropriate, are there any comments right now from the group besides what we've already heard?
Are we going to revisit this when Mr. McKaysey comes back in the room so that he knows that he could be part of it, and secondly, that it was suggested he might want to be part of it?
I can talk to him afterwards.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you very much.
And then I'm going to combine the selection. I've got 8 and 9 for me, selection committee report and revised application. We met as a group, a committee, about a week and a half ago. Paul and Dan were on the committee, and Lois was kind enough to join us. And then we also had, from the Office of the Regent, we had Brian Steves and Sarah Dirksen also attend. So we were able to get some good discussion and input. Let's start with the selection criteria. We kept a majority of the things they had. There's a significant amount of revision that was done on the last go-around on these criteria. And so there wasn't a lot of changes in this area, but you will see that we updated number 11. There was a comment during our committee meeting that 11 looked like it was hard for somebody to, if they were looking at these criteria, to write their answers and kind of give us a perspective of who they were, that this was an item that was something that the ARCPAC looked at and not necessarily something that an individual would write their own criteria. So we modified this slightly, and then we also modified number 12 to reflect the technology that's currently being used by the Board of Regents. Because it's not necessarily email communication that is an issue now, it's online portal access. Mm-hmm. So those were two updates, and then also Paul and Lois recommended that we split, if you flip the page over on professional and experiential backgrounds, we split that one apart for understanding the higher education trends and then understanding the economic role of the university. Mm-hmm. So those were the clarifications we made. On that, does anybody have any comments or any other suggestions on changes or criteria that need to be incorporated?
Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Kathy, I appreciate the changes that have been made. One of the things that I heard in our last cycle was the necessity for subject matter expertise on the board, and so that came up in the context of we were losing two medical experts, and since so much of the university's mission right now relates to our desire to have the medical school, you know, go to the top of its class and to enhance a reputation as a research university, should there be, and that may change over time, there may be some focus whereby we say we need expertise in STEM or we're losing ground in something else in terms of our ability to attract, retain, and recruit, you know, the finest professionals. Should there be something in our criteria that acknowledges, as we look at candidates, that they should be prepared to display a depth in some subject matter expertise so that we get a broad group of regents?
So are you thinking that on number 11 that you would want to expand that to where it says diversity in geography, gender, race, occupation, international awareness, and operational needs? Do you think that occupation and operational needs need to be expanded?
Well, and perhaps I skipped, and I don't know if we had gotten to professional experiential. I was more thinking in the professional experiential to call out that whatever candidate we're talking to, that we that we have as a criteria that we really do want somebody who's got some kind of expertise or accomplishment, achievement in some area, and then we would know, depending on what the needs of the university was at the time, whether or not that meets what we are looking for. But just to try and have something that elevates the caliber of who even submits an application. Not that I'm not saying anything negative about who does, but just to make sure we insist on the highest caliber possible.
Sure. Do you think that if it's more situational, depending on the needs of the cycle, do you think that it might be something that we put in the application that we want some specific information there rather than in the overall selection criteria?
Well, Mr. Chair and Kathy, I guess I would say still I would want an applicant to be able to submit some lifetime achievement credentials in some kind of a subject area expertise. That's my own view.
Margaret.
I agree with Terry. I think that actually needs to be a separate line for this reason. The university's budget is in excess of $3 billion a year, and probably a third of that goes to health sciences and medical and that type of thing. And should you ever find yourself, we don't right now, but a lack of people with real expertise in that area, what seems to happen in watching the Regents meetings, this is firsthand experience, you get a lot of tactical tinkering. And so I would say that, and I'm not trying to wordsmith today, but what it is, it's professional knowledge and expertise in the highest priority areas for the University of Minnesota. That isn't good words, but what it is saying, that will change over time. But what the university has articulated really needs to be addressed. Then when the chair comes in, as he did today, and talked about strategic planning, we should have pushed him a little further on that expertise.
And just one more comment on that. You know, in particular, excuse me, we've seen the unraveling of the agreement between Fairview and the university, which is a very serious thing that the university is confronting right now. And so I just want to make sure as we look at region candidates that we consider their expertise in grappling with such a complex issue-oriented dilemma. Well, Senator, they'll give you a... So
okay.
And I don't have any recommendation of exact words, but if you could just consider that perhaps with your ad hoc committee as well, maybe to consider that.
So that would be a different committee. So I can, with the selection criteria committee, I will put together some wording so that we
selection criteria. This one sheet goes along with the application.
Yep. So on the application, what we did was we had a lot of good feedback from the Office of the Regent. We made some changes in the area of the actual applications itself. In the governing board experience, we added language to say that the chair during service and executive offices during service and the phone numbers, we identified those as for reference purposes so that we could call those people. The other thing that was changed in this application is when you get to the reference section, we tried to be more specific about the consent that people were giving to us to contact references. So you'll see some additional language in here about that, and also a direct line in here that says, by submitting this application, you consent to council members discussing the entire content of this application with individuals identified as references. So, because that's what happens during the reference process. So we really wanted the applicants to be aware of what was going to be going on during the reference checking process. So we made those changes. And then in the essay questions, we spent a lot of time during the committee meeting discussing what were relevant questions, how did we get to the issue of that complex, you know, team-oriented skill set that we needed people to bring to the Regent Council. So we made some changes, and just a second, let me grab my red lines, to this. We changed question two to talk about your decision-making style and looking for examples where people have been effective in a large committee meeting. That was something we felt needed to be addressed. Number three, we were working on a question that talked about the strategic direction and governance oversight in a large complex organization to address one of the issues that was raised by Regent Johnson. We revised question number four to ask for some current information about important issues at the University of Minnesota. The original question had dealt with only diversity, and we wanted to expand it beyond that because we feel that there's broader issues that need to be taken care of. And then question number six was an updated version from the Office of the Regent about the time commitment and also the actual process that they have firsthand knowledge on, kind of what the commitment is, and wanted some feedback from the candidates on that issue. So those were the changes that we made on the application to address what we felt were current issues. A lot of good discussion during our committee meeting and good feedback subsequently from the Office of the Regent from Brian and Sarah. So that's the changes that we made. Any comments or questions?
Just quickly acknowledge that Senator Pratt has joined us. We
Thank
appreciate
you,
that very much.
Firmly.
That's okay. Thank you. Questions? Oh, Bert.
This is really tedious work, and I just want to commend you and the committee, Kathy, for getting down in the weeds, notwithstanding what Regent Johnson said about weeds.
Margaret?
Maybe two should say, how would others characterize your style in a group? Because I think people have personal perspectives on themselves, but that allows us, when we go into the questions, to say or to check references. Because one of the questions to ask the references is, you know, no one's perfect in their governance role. What do you see might be a problem? And then not let that question slip by. You probe deeply to that. And at least by wording the question like that, that helps with it. So I would strongly suggest that. I like your change of the diversity issue because we got the same answer from everybody last time. The other thing I would say from a practical reason, they only put four references down. Here becomes the problem. We meet in December. If you're Christian, you have the holidays over 2 weeks out of that. And our first meeting is January 4th. It is so difficult to get those calls made, to get them written up, to get them back to Sally. I really think people need 6 to 8 there. Now, you know, and particularly if they have ever served on a board at the University of Minnesota. Now, maybe you don't want to put that in, that last part, but to me, what Dean Johnson said, that he was right on target, is past service and current service tells us what someone's going to be like in the future.
So what others characterize you, you're not suggesting we use the word detractors in there, as he suggested.
No, but you know, if people are honest, they'll say things like, I'm impatient, I'm pushy,
mm-hmm.
I'm pushy. I would say that.
Tenacious.
but I think even being able to articulate that, then I would have had comma, but I always try to bring constructive comments, particularly if someone had said, Margaret, you're not behaving well. So it's that kind of thing. I think it gives the person an opportunity to talk realistically about what they're really like.
Very good. Other questions or comments about it? Kathy, thank you. And the team, Lois, excuse me.
I have a little bit of a flip back to the selection criteria and the emphasis on professional experience. As we look at the chair of the board and the reference to former legislator Brode, both quality regents and part of the discussion here before us today, they came to that position with some pretty strong generalist backgrounds. And I view the culling for professionalism and what a current need, and I emphasize that very strongly, current need, yet ongoing, I realize, of the board is to be our task in the way in which we look at the overall picture of a quality governance person, and that it is not a criteria to get through the door. And to that end, I want us to be able to create a roster of criteria for selection that goes to a good ability to govern collaboratively in a group with an intellect that can capture the broad range of topics that has to be covered by a University of Minnesota regent and a land-grant institution, and such that our applicant pool can be as open and broad to the full citizenry of the state as possible. And then it is our task, our reason for existence, in how we recruit and in how we cull and vet to narrow into some specific needs at any given time on the Board of Regents. I really would speak to keeping our selection criteria as broad as possible and not narrow into rich professional histories, because that reduces the pool of available applicants in our statewide citizenry pretty critically.
Carrie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Lois, with regard to that, what I would say is it is up to RCAC to ensure the depth and breadth of the governing board, but you won't even be able to have that ability if you don't see on an applicant's submission what their expertise is. And so I would still urge that you set forward as part of your personal, professional, experiential, a question about where do you excel, so that you can put together a board that does meet the overall needs that you're facing at any point in time, because that will be changing. But if you just have broad questions that don't allow an applicant to pinpoint their credentials and achievement in some subject matter, you may not have the ability to put together the kind of pool you're looking to put together.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonner, yes, in the application format, I was viewing the the initial discussion as targeted to selection criteria and enabling the applicant to see the place where they can insert that on the application bears significant logic, but not structure the application such that oh my goodness, you know, I don't have XYZ years of this professional training and experience, and so therefore they're really after a doctor this time and they're not going to choose me, you know, that kind of circumstance.
Yep.
Don't want that limitation to be felt by an applicant, but yet to, on the application, again, not in the selection criteria, have the place where the person with a deep medical experience, for example, could say, I think I have a very good potential to serve here in general and particularly at this point in time, and here's where I can tell them about it.
But Mr. Chair, I think if you look in the case of Laura Broad, she actually has very strong business experience. She has led organizations, complex organizations. In the case of Dean Johnson, he was was a general or something? I mean,
right, yeah.
Chaplain.
Deep experiences, but not in professions. Yes.
Well, no, but yeah. Very deep and accomplished experience.
Yes.
So I still would hope that in our professional and experiential categories, we would still be looking for people who have had significant achievements in their life in
yes.
some capacity.
Very good.
Thank you.
Other comments?
Thank you, Senator.
Okay.
Kathy.
So here's the deal. We have to finish our language today because we have to adopt this mm-hmm. so that we can have the application process. So why don't I hold this for a moment? Let me go out in the hall, write something down. You guys can move on. I can bring it back, and then we can work on it.
Very good.
I'm hearing Lois say that she thinks that there should be an additional essay question on the application to deal with this. Yes or no, am I hearing that correctly?
I'm thinking it belongs as part of the application as versus the selection criteria, so that it's a place to enable expression. I do not know whether it's an additional question, whether it's a massaging of an existing one. I have not gone that deep.
Okay, I do agree with Senator Bonoff. I can see adding it as a criteria because the criteria lead us back to the application questions because they're a cohesive unit. So let me go out and I understand your concern about not being narrowly tailored
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, we have kind of the broad professional expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And give me about 10 minutes and I'll be back.
Can I ask one question before?
Yes.
Before that, I'm, again, sorry. Question number four, in addition to universal higher education issues, tuition and student debt, please address three important issues. And as I'm scanning through this, we never talk about tuition and student debt and really asking either the understanding or the any sort of ideas that they have around it. And I think that's a miss, and we should probably, I don't want to add to it, but I think those are issues that we do want to address and find out where these candidates are coming from.
Regent, that is one of the hottest issues at the University of Minnesota. It affects the most people,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a higher education consultant, it's a national issue. So I wouldn't exclude that. I would ask them, because it really should be on their short list.
So, and I'll just tell you why we framed the question the way we did, is because we figured that everybody knows that those are the hot button issues, and those are things that we would ask during the interview process. We wanted to go beyond that and find out, you know, beyond the things that are in the headlines, did they have, you know, issues that they wanted to bring up. So knowing that the tuition and the student debt are issues, absolutely, we wanted a deeper response than just kind of what's in the headlines. That's why we had taken that position.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it shouldn't be covered, but we felt that that could be an interview question
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, we really wanted to get the deeper understanding.
Ariel,
this
Senator Pratt's point, when I'm looking at applications in December
mm-hmm.
and I look at question number four, I will probably give a higher score to those who addressed tuition and student debt and then, in addition, picked something else. And if people picked three other issues and didn't say anything about tuition and student debt, I would probably speak up that I wonder why they didn't. So we're not saying instead of, we're saying in addition to. And that was kind of, I mean, Kathy's right. We spent a fair amount of time wrestling it with it in this room less than 2 weeks ago.
I noticed that when the student debt came up, our student member here kind of raised up in his chair a little bit. So Theo, do you want to make some comments?
I do agree with Mr. Taylor and Senator Pratt. I do think when we're looking at these applications, I think seeing how somebody would initially address the issue of student debt would be vitally important in terms of moving forward and interviewing these people. So I think if we can maybe even create another question in terms of how they'd like to deal or how they view these issues right now, I think it's incredibly important.
So I can change the question because we don't want to have so many questions that people are writing. I could change the question to say that I can word it in the way we want them to answer on universal debt and tuition and student debt, and then maybe one or two other things, but they have to go beyond just tuition and student debt.
Margaret, and then we'll let Kathy go do her work.
I would just ask them what they think are the three most important issues facing the University of Minnesota. I don't think you have to hand them that question. Anybody who really is knowledgeable about universities should come up with that, or if you do that, then ask a separate question about student debt.
Okay.
I mean,
Bill?
Just one comment. The way it's phrased, in addition to, it has in my mind, when I read it, perhaps to be read in an ambiguous way, that everybody already knows about it, won't comment on it. If it's a hot question, ask it, and then ask for an additional. But as it's phrased, I think it has a bit of ambiguity.
Okay.
Sorry. Sorry, Mr. Chair, sorry to belabor, but so perhaps the real question with regard to that is how would you propose to address student debt and the high cost of tuition, and what else additionally do you think the university could do?
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Thank you. All right. I believe we're at number 10. Paul.
In your packet today, there are three documents pertinent to the recruitment plan. The first is just an overview of the committees, and you can see the recruitment is to prepare a recruitment plan, engaging individuals, organizations, and media to ensure the broadest possible qualified candidates. The second is a yellow sheet highlighting the four regents whose terms will expire in 2017. Congressional districts 2, 3, and 4, and then the citizen at-large position. And then the third is a very nice handout with one paragraph descriptions of each of the 12 current regents, so you'll be able to see those four and take particular note of their qualifications. I don't have a comprehensive, well-formed plan at this moment, but as Ardell acknowledged, we are moving ahead. Pleased to report that the University of Minnesota Alumni Association has committed to actively partnering with us in securing a broad pool of qualified candidates, knowing that one of them is the citizen at large position. It really should mean that every UMA club, not only in the state of Minnesota, but it doesn't mean that if you're in Chicago, you can't think of someone who you know who is a current resident of Minnesota. They've also committed to hosting a reception similar to the one that we had 2 years ago in on the sixth floor. We had a very nice reception, and so they're happy to do that again. When we met here a week or two ago, the Regents' office suggested to think about initiative foundations, the Minnesota Business Partnership, and so we've got quite a large group of, in my mind, friends of the university that we should be, you know, getting to on a personal basis sooner rather than later so that they can get started, and that's kind of where we are with the plan at the moment.
Okay. Any questions on that? Does that bring
us? Paul, sorry to talk so much, but do you want us to volunteer? Because I will talk to the Minnesota Women's Economic Roundtable. And if a number of us can do that and get the word out, that probably will help. Do you want that, Paul, or we just go on our own?
Okay. SSETaylor@gmail.com. Let me know what your plan is to be a part of the recruitment team.
All right.
So, both from Sally and Paul, the sheet we have that has the RCAC committees, there's four of them on there. Are we looking for chairs then of those? The interview process in question, candidate orientation, recruitment, public relations, and references. Is that okay? Recruitment and reference both there. So it's really the two that are on that on our agenda: interview process and questions. Does anybody volunteer to be the chair, and also then the candidate orientation that you mentioned, that too, the needed chair. Is that correct, Paul? Too?
I'm sorry?
Is that correct then? It's under that part that you were taking care of one, Lois has got one, recruitment references, and then we've got interview process and candidate orientation. So, I don't know if we have anybody. No volunteers
it's
here.
Possible that they'll at the time that we need a chair for the candidate orientation committee, that a person who's so ably fulfilled that responsibility in the past would be willing to do so again.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would volunteer for the candidate orientation.
Oh, very good. Bill Brady. Candidate orientation. So then we also have the interview process and questions. So
Dan might be willing to take this. I'm volunteering everybody, but but I do think it fits with his expertise at Pfizer. I mean, I think
Sally just reminded me that we think he chaired it last year, so maybe he would do it again. Can we assume that?
Sure, go.
Sure. Easy for us to say, huh? Well, good. Paul, thank you for your report, and we're off and running on that one. Next item, is that right? Excuse me. Kathy's back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here are the proposals for the additions to address the questions and comments that were made previously to the selection criteria. I think if we take the professional experiential item number 2 and we broaden this out, what we're proposing to add is for this to read accomplishments and a history of success that reflect a breadth and diversity in life experience, as well as any subject matter expertise that would be beneficial to the priorities of the University of Minnesota.
Great.
Okay. All right. And then to address Margaret's comment about additional references, given the time constraints over the holidays, we felt it would be better, instead of adding so many spaces, to add a line at the bottom that says, please provide additional references if desired on a separate sheet of paper, so that if people have them, they can provide them, but not be overwhelmed by 8 blank spaces.
I think that's a good compromise. I think there are some people who would like to do that, and really a strong candidate would do that.
And we were just mindful of the students, you know, region applicants, they don't necessarily have that many, and they might be overwhelmed by 8 spots, but they
then to address Lois's concern that we match up our criteria with the application, we're proposing to change question number one to say, what has been your most important work or volunteer achievement? Please describe it briefly and include how this expertise could benefit the priorities of the university, which would give them the chance to kind of tie those criteria together. Comments?
Did you change number two?
I changed number two to say, how would others characterize your style? We weren't to two yet.
Oh, all right. I'm eager.
And then to address the comments raised by Senator Pratt, we looked at number four, and we're going to revise this one to say, how would you address the issues of tuition, student debt, and up to three additional important issues currently confronting the University of Minnesota. Can I make it clear? Okay, so those are the changes that we're going to be making, and I will get updated copies to Sally because I've got the Word documents. So I'm proposing, Mr. Chair, that we vote on these changes.
Excellent.
Mr.
Laws.
Chair, could you please repeat, if you'd be so kind, what changes you made to number two, if any?
Sure, and instead of saying, how do you characterize your style, it's how would others characterize your style in a group decision making.
Mr. Chair, I move those changes to be included in the application. And
thank you.
The other documents.
And there's a second. Other comments or discussions? You're quicker than Wikipedia or Google to go out in the hall and do all of that stuff. So that, and so good, and much more accurate, too. Thank you. Thank you so much. Hearing no other comments, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And thank you to Kathy as well. It's passing. Passed. That is excellent work. Dan, while you were out of the room, it was suggested that I think you had a task last year, the interview and process questions chair wondered if you would be willing to take that on. You did.
Yeah, sure.
Experience counts. Oh, okay. Sally will be sending a sheet around. We'll need volunteers to serve on those various committees as well. Theo, did you have a question?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
So we'll pass that around, and you can sign up for that as well. Are we down to the green handout? So that is the schedule proposed. Heading on with tonight, the first thing this morning we did, September 16th, and we're moving right along, and so there'll be activity. So the next time we will get together is Friday, December 9th. Is that correct? Proposed, if that works. Mr. Erickson, and I do want to point out that he's here. He has been, it's indicated to him that he's being reappointed, but that has not been, I don't think it's been done yet. So anyway, Jim. Mm-hmm. Yep. Why don't you come forward then? Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have been, it has been indicated to me that the Senate does intend to make its appointments, and I will be among them, but I'm here sitting in the peanut gallery today. But on the schedule, I pay some particular attention to that, and I'd like to give a couple of comments to the committee before the council, before it adopts it. I was involved in, you may recall, the deadline for applying used to be before the election. And we, two cycles ago, I think, changed it to be after the election so that people who thought that that had something to do with their candidacy could be aware of what the jury was like. And I think that's an appropriate thing to do. But I'm wondering, in light of the comments, and I'm going to just suggest for your consideration, in light of the comments about the timing here that was alluded to, I'm wondering if you need to wait until December 2nd to make the deadline. I think that's more than enough time following Election Day. And I would suggest you consider making that deadline perhaps even Friday the 18th, which is a week and a half after the election, if anyone is paying attention to that, and then give some consideration to moving up by perhaps 1 week the date that this committee meets, the December 9th date, to select the interviewees. That gives the interview process more time. As Margaret indicated, that's a very daunting task. So, Mr. Chair, I would just suggest you consider, and were I a member of the committee, I would probably move that we consider the deadline being earlier, and I think it could be as early as the 18th of November, and then that's the, instead of the December 2nd, which is more than enough time, I think, and then we consider meeting that, having that December 9th date earlier to give a little more time for interviewing. You run into Thanksgiving there, so it probably can't go that quickly, but I think it does take, it needs some time, and the committee needs everybody, we can't meet, but we'll look at those. Sally gets them out, and it takes some time to kind of review all those applications and come to some conclusions about who we're going to interview. They don't get to present before that, and so that's a pretty black and white decision whether you get an interview or not. And I think more time given among to us to think about that would be helpful. So, Mr. Chair, with that's just my suggestion. I don't need to be part of the discussion, but I'd encourage the committee to think about those deadlines. Now, Sally may know some reasons that those dates are not.
I think she's ready to speak to that.
Can't be dealt with, so there may be some practical implications here that I don't know about, but it just practically I think we'd be better off.
No, I was just going to point out that I think originally we have in previous years, or you have had an earlier November deadline, and before the last cycle, there was instances where there wasn't quite enough applicants, and so the chair, which he has the authority to, would extend the deadline by a couple weeks, so it ended up being that later date. And then I think at the last time the council met, it was decided instead of having an extension of the date, we'd just be firm with the later date as is. But so, I mean, either would way, just providing background information.
I rise to speak in support of Sally Olson. It is very easy for us on the 16th of September to say people will have plenty of time after November 8th to submit an application, so let's move up the application date by 2 weeks. I am very active as a volunteer mentor with the Minnesota Cup and the Midwest region of the Clean Tech Open. And both of those business competitions require that people do a significant amount of work and submit it by a deadline. I mentored three Clean Tech Open companies this year. The application deadline was 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday the 14th. The earliest of the three was 6 p.m. on the 14th of September. So, Jim, we can feel good today and think we're giving ourselves all kind of time, but I vote in support of the green sheet.
Any other comments on that? Thank you, Paul. So this is a proposed schedule, and there's been suggestion for change and to keep it as it's presented. Have a motion one way or the other?
I move we convert the proposed schedule into the actual RCAC schedule.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Second? Further comments? Questions? If not, it's moved that we change proposed to the schedule. And all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? There it is. Jim, thanks for your comments.
Just my thought.
Yep.
Wisdom of the committee. Mr. Chair, while I'm at the table, if there's new business, I'd like to raise one more issue with the committee, if I could. You have a list of the RAC membership in your package, and I would encourage the chair and Sally to encourage the leadership. leaders of both bodies to fill all those spots. We are short-staffed by 5 slots, and I think we'd all do better with more people at the table. I think the Senate has 4 appointments to make for ending in 2022, and I think the Senate, by looking at it, would have a spot for a term ending in 2020. And the House looks like they have 1 more spot for a term ending in 2022. And so I would encourage the chair to encourage the leaders and our members here that are in the bodies to give us a full complement of 24 people, because our work product, I think, would be much, much enhanced, and we'd get a broader, representation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I hope you will do that.
We'll do that. The not really along that, but I'm looking at both of our senators here as to what is, and of course the 2 House members aren't here, but is that going to stay the same, the membership? They're listed. You're all listed as your terms end and so on. So.
So for now, Senator Bach has said that he had planned to keep us on here. I haven't talked to him. I didn't even know that he had talked to Jim about the ongoing process. I have not talked to Senator Bach, and I couldn't hear what Senator Pratt was asking me.
Well, I was just wondering if it required a vote to appoint us, but I don't think it does.
Not you and I.
Okay.
No. Our term continues unless he takes us off.
But I think it's interesting that, and I was going to talk to Senator Bonoff, that we were appointed based on our role in the Senate
exactly.
House, and we should probably think that, you know, after we reorganize in January, whether or not, we should reorganize. I don't know if I'm going to stay on higher ed.
Exactly, and I won't be on higher ed no matter what. So one would expect a change in this
one
seat. Yes.
Sally, you have some comments?
And then just one thing to point out with both of your terms is you're appointed just as any other member, because you're not serving as a legislator, so you're a 6-year term like anyone else, so just so, yeah, because it's not, so just so that's in your radar.
You're here for the duration.
In other words.
Well, we would want you to be here because you might take us to your suite at the new U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yes. It's a term.
You're going to get out easy, though.
It's a term, not a sentence.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Bert.
I've got one other issue I'd like to raise, and I didn't think of it till I got here this morning, and it has to do with nominations. I don't know how the nominating committee is chosen. I'm happy with the composition of it now. I'm happy with their recommendations, but I think it should be formalized, and to my knowledge, it is not. For example, what's the number that should be on the nominating committee? Should there be balance among congressional districts? Should there be balance among years of classes of appointments? Should there be balance among House members and Senate member appointees? Should there be minutes, et cetera? So unless there is a process in place that I don't know about and we don't know about, I would like to see it formalized for the future.
So just some background, there technically really isn't a nominating committee right now. So it was just whoever volunteered and made a motion. I think in previous years there was a nominating committee, but as some of you may recall in 2012 when the council, we discovered that we were under 13D, it became challenging because all these subcommittees had to apply by the open meeting law and have set date and, have be open to the public. But, I mean, if that's something the council would like to formalize.
Well, I think our leadership is important, and I think that being organized and transparent is important, too. So I think we should formalize it. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask you to figure out how to get that done.
Okay. We'll have a little time to work on that one, too, before the next time. I'm going to look to the 2 co-chairs, too. Do you have any comments? Vice Chair, Lois, anything? I want to just quickly make just a couple things. One main one is I tend to be pretty informal as I address all of you, and it's not because I disrespect any of you, and I know there's sometimes sitting in these offices there's more protocol that that I should do probably, but when I say either Eric or Terry, it's not a disrespect, and the rest of you, I go by first name often on that, but if you'd rather have it some other way, I can certainly adjust. I try and do that with our city council, too, only because I expect them to respect me, too, at that time. But thank you. This is good. We're going to be finished, I think, a little earlier than what we thought. From Rochester standpoint, we're going to be fortunate to have the University of Minnesota Marching Band again, all 300-plus, on November 29th in Rochester, a free concert. McDonald's continues to feed them their cheeseburgers and whatever else it is that they have, which they always look forward to it. And we will be giving away again probably five $1,000 scholarships to a member in the band, which we get basically from the free will offering that's done at the event. But it's usually 4,000 people come to that. It's a huge event, and people ask me about a month or 2 weeks after the last concert, are they coming again next year? And I said, no, we've been doing it every other year. This, I think, is our 15th time doing it, so it's been going on for 30 years, having them every other year, and it's a big event. So that's it. And any other comments that anybody has? Well, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for your work this morning and the work that will be coming up and what you've given to the university in the past as well. Welcome to Theo this morning. Glad to have you here, and we'll get Chuck, you're new. Oh, excuse me. I just like, sorry. That's what I said. It's, you know, a week goes by, and I sometimes forget even who my neighbor is. You know, that may be. But anyway, Chuck, welcome again, too, to this and your participation in it. Appreciate it very much. It's this is an important organization and council that we have, and sometimes I think the whole process and the Dean Johnson mentioned that you know, it's important. Multiple people probably over the years try and fix it in some ways. I know the chancellor in Rochester, Stephen Lemkuhl, has experience in other college settings, and he always says, yeah, it's probably got some, you know, blemishes on it all, but this works better than any place he'd ever been, even with some of the issues that we point out at times. So, but thank you again, and safe travels as well.
And thank Mr. Chair, Terry's fine.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.